The goal is not simply to have lots of stuff or lots of money. The goal is living life on your own terms. Whether it's decluttering our homes, getting out of debt, or striving to build financial independence, what we are all seeking is actually time. And time is ultimately our freedom. Owning your own time is true wealth. On this podcast, we'll explore ways we can reclaim our life. Please join me, your host, Meg Nordman, on this journey to freedom. Hello, my friends. I'm back. It's been a while. I haven't even looked to see when the last episode was, but I feel like it was, 3 months ago, 4 months ago. It's been a while. And thank you for your patience. I needed a break. I wore myself out between writing that book in 2019 and publishing in 2020, then really kind of kicking off the blog and the podcast 2021. And I just kind of ran myself into the ground, literally physically. I got really sick. I think I probably had COVID despite being vaccinated. And I just went into kind of a darker place, insecure, unmotivated, not feeling inspired or creative at all. And even when I got physically better, I just kind of stayed in that mindset for a while. And it was kind of like once I quit for a little while and I lost that momentum, I just could not find that drive to get it back. But I think I've rested long enough. I've binged enough crap on Netflix and Hulu, and I'm back. All of a sudden a lightning bolt struck me and the motivation and the creativity came back, and it feels like I'm taking a big breath of fresh air. It's fabulous. So thank you again for your patience, and I'm very excited to finally start season two. I still have some conversations recorded from months ago that I'm ready to sit down and edit and get those aired, and a lot of fresh ideas for where I want to take this in the future, which is really what I needed. I think I just needed to kind of step back and reevaluate. So yeah, I'm excited to kick off season two of the podcast. The next episode after this is going to be a chat that I had with Jillian Johnsrud. She's amazing. It's on many retirements and also her new book that just published, a month ago. And then I have all sorts of interesting ideas and conversations coming after that. And first, before I get into this one, I wanted to update you on the jungle chapter, as I call it. As you know, and you might remember from season one and my blog and everything, that we retired officially in April this year. And the goal has always been for 7 years now to get to the jungle. We really are looking forward to the geo-arbitrage part of being fired, of financial independence or early retirement, whatever you want to call it. And we originally were looking at Nicaragua when we first began this, and then the politics got nuts down there and feels a little unsafe. So we switched our focus to Costa Rica, and I'm really excited. I guess it was a month ago, probably exactly now, Jeremy, my husband, went down to Costa Rica with one of his really good friends. His name is Sean. And I don't know if I described this last season. I probably did, but we're planning on going in on a lot with another couple. And they're amazing. Their names are Sean and Autumn. They're awesome. I cannot express that enough, how cool these people are. And they currently live on a catamaran in the Virgin Islands. And they did van life in New Zealand before that. They're really awesome people. And they're going to go in a lot with us. The plan is to build a structure for us and a structure for them. We'll be able to live in it. It will probably be very tiny and rudimentary to begin with. And then we will start building out cabinas that we can rent out, short-term vacation rentals, and then have some joint structures, probably like a big outdoor kitchen, a big yoga platform, a gazebo kind of situation. We will be homesteading and working on all that together because both families, both couples, we want to be grounded and rooted, you know, in a place where I want to be able to plant a tree and then know that 20 years later, it will still be my tree and it will be huge and fruiting and I can eat the fruit from this tree. And I really want that, you know, and Jeremy, he wants to build our actual house that we live in and for the rest of our lives. But we also all want to travel. We want this very nomadic life full of experiences and travel. And how does one get the best of both worlds? How do you become very rooted, you know, and have a shop for all your woodworking and an art studio for all your art making and garden and homestead and go travel with children all the time? So we have figured we're just such compatible couples, and that's kind of a hard, unique thing to find. And we figure it could look like this. It could look like, hey, you go travel for 3 months and do your thing, and we'll hold the fort down here. You know, we'll feed your dog, we'll manage your rental, we'll clean your rental, we'll keep the crops going, everything's going to stay watered. And then when you get back, it's our turn, and we'll go travel for 3 months and you hold the fort down. So, you know, everything is just in theory. It has been this entire journey, 7 years of not really knowing what we're doing until we're doing it, you know, and seeing if it works out. And if it doesn't, we pivot. But right now, that is this, you know, dream utopia vision that we're working towards. And it was just so exciting that they actually went to Costa Rica, and what they were doing, the goal was not to necessarily go property shopping or a house, you know, house hunting or anything, but it was actually on a larger scale, was to find the region, like the actual location. So they were more like village hunting, for lack of a better word, because we had a couple of places in mind that we'd all been kind of eyeing. Some of them were places that we'd been to before. Some of them, none of us had been, but we'd, you know, stumbled across them through blogs or YouTube videos or whatnot, and got really excited about the prospect of that area. And, you know, this whole time, even during the pandemic, we'd hop on Zoom, we'd share our ideas and share links and get excited about things together. So it was really cool that they were kind of able to physically go down there and scope out all these areas. And one of them, we were all four of us, we were really looking at this spot closely and pretty dang sure that's where we wanted to be. And the minute they got there, it was the first place they went. The minute they got there, they were like, nope, this is not it. No way. We will not invest any money in this area. And there were several reasons, but the largest reason for that one was erosion. It's actually a thing you have to be concerned about these days with climate change. The ocean is taking back this little village faster than they could rebuild the roads. I mean, the roads were literally crumbling into the ocean, and they were trying to constantly build it back, you know, out further, encroaching into people's properties. People's properties are just falling into the ocean. And it's part climate change and part the, you know, once you really look at the geography of where this village is situated, I mean, no matter what you do, the ocean is the way the currents are and everything, the ocean's going to take this piece of land back. And so that would not be a wise long-term investment to settle a family and hope to be able to pass down to your children and grandchildren, because it won't be there in 40 years. So they were able to write that off pretty quickly, but then they were trapped there because it's rainy season. And once it started raining, you couldn't get out of the village. So yeah, another red flag. So once they were able to get out, they went and checked out another area that we've all been to before. And this area is actually where our couple's friends that we're going in on this with, that's where they got married. And we all fell in love with this area. Oh my gosh, it's unreal. Absolutely unreal. The most biodiverse place on the planet. I cannot express to you how much wildlife is there. And they went down there, fell madly in love with it. Both guys just were like, yep, this is it right away. You know, like the way they had the same gut reaction to the first place, they had the opposite immediate gut reaction to the other place. And they were like, we're done looking. This is where we want to be. And the reason why it was the guys going first and not the wives is because the location first matters the most to the men because they are avid surfers. And the whole point of this particular area for us all is that these guys get to go surf amazing waves because that is their lifeblood. That is their passion. And, you know, I think it's, what's the saying? Happy wives, happy lives, something like that. It's kind of like the opposite. As long as these men are surfing really good waves, they are happy and everything works wonderfully. So I just need to keep my husband in some good waves. That's what I've learned. Let him go get in the ocean every day. I do not nag him. I do not expect anything. I was just like, nope, you wake up, you go get in the ocean, and the rest of the day will go smoothly. So anyway, they found this spot that has not just one, but three epic waves that, from what I can understand, different times of the day, there are a different wave pops up. So for example, if it's high tide, you go over here, there's an amazing wave. Then it switches. Now it's low tide. Now there's an amazing wave over here. And whenever it switches to this condition, then another amazing wave appears over here. So no matter what, they're going to have amazing waves. So it's a utopia for them. And that's great because the things that matter to us wives is the land. You know, I'm over here on the beach with the kids and I just love the flora and the fauna and the wildlife. So I don't really care so much about the waves because I'm not a surfer. So they found their spot. I'm equally happy about what the land situation is. So anyway, it just became so real once the guys were like, this is it. This is where we're focusing. So once they both agreed, like, this is the spot, then they started property hunting, which really wasn't the plan for this trip. But while they're down there, they wanted to take a look and see what was available and see what the prices were. And sadly, we can't afford the perfect spot. It's just, you know, part of geo arbitrage is to make sure your dollar is going further than it would in the States. That's the whole point of it. And, you know, everything in the States is inflating. Our real estate is inflating, but it's not just here. It's global inflation. All the other countries, all of their real estate is inflating too. I mean, there's, you know, little docuseries on YouTube that you can look up if you want to see what's going on globally. But yeah, it's inflating down there. And obviously we chose a highly desirable spot to be in, despite the fact that it's ridiculously difficult to get to this spot. It's super remote. The roads are not paved. There is no electricity that runs down there. There's no water. There's no fiber optics. There's nothing. So you have to be off the grid, which is great to us. That's what we want to do, even if there was the option. We'd still want to be off grid. But still, it's amazing that despite all this challenge, there's no businesses at all down there, not a single one. But despite all that, it's still a highly desirable place because it is so beautiful. And part of the appeal of it is how remote it is. And they all, everyone that owns the land down there knows that it's a gem with the surf being so ideal. So we can't afford that particular spot, but we can afford an 8-minute drive north of that. So not very far, still on the beach, and still waves. So just not as epic of waves. So we can still afford this kind of dream area that we're looking for. And if the surf is amazing, 8 minutes south, then they can hop on a dirt bike or hop in a four-wheel drive and go down there, you know? So anyway, it's going to work out. So they found a lot in particular that they're both really excited about. And of course, I'm like just sitting here in the States, just like awaiting them hooking up to Wi-Fi and sending me some pictures or some videos. And I posted a lot of that on Instagram. If you're curious, it's Meg Nordman on Instagram. And just scroll back a month ago, and I have some of that on there for you. But the one we're looking at apparently has a pathway that goes through the jungle down to the beach. And apparently the trees like arch over it like a tunnel, you know, like the way, say, oak trees do here in the States. And then there's another tree kind of mixed in with those larger ones that has yellow flowers. So it's like a tunnel of yellow flowers with all the yellow flower petals that have fallen onto the pathway while you're walking down to the beach. And my husband is not a very poetic man, but, you know, he doesn't exaggerate things and illustrate things the way I would. But to hear my husband describing that, you know, I'm like, oh God, I cannot imagine just how insanely beautiful it must be. I cannot wait to go and see it. So this brings me to my next bit of exciting news. 2 days ago, or was it yesterday? Gosh, it was yesterday, actually, 1 day ago. We kind of almost completely solidified the long-term rental that we may be living in. Okay, quick disclaimer, if my current landlord is listening to this, don't take any action. I'm serious, y'all. My landlord follows me online, so she might end up listening to this. So, dear landlord, if you're listening to this, don't take any action on anything yet, because nothing is actually concrete yet. I do plan on telling my landlord probably about, I don't know, 3 months in advance, 4 months in advance, if things do continue to move in this direction, because I want her to have a good ample heads up. But at this moment, I'm very excited because it does seem like we're moving in this direction, but it's not concrete yet. And I think we're going to end our lease finally. We will have been here in St. Augustine Beach for 6 years. We told ourselves when we moved here, 5 years. We said we'll be here for 5 years and then we're moving to the jungle. Well, we achieved firing in 5 years. And it looks like we just have extended our stay one more year before we actually make this move happen. So I think that's great. I think that's grand. There's only one realtor down there in this very remote area. And of course, they met up with her. She showed them every single thing remotely available down there. And she also manages, I would wager, 75% of the short-term rental properties that are available down there. And I've been talking with her constantly for the past week. And I gave her like my ideal situation in order to find the lowest possible long-term rent that I could down there, which surprisingly is pretty comparable to where we are here. I'll say this. We currently have ridiculously low rent. It is impossible to find rent this low where we are right now, especially with the real estate market being so inflationary over the past year or two. And the rental market, the long-term rental market down there is now, with inflation, comparable to our steel that we have right now. So it's still great. It's still good. So she found basically exactly what I described of what I was picturing. And it's this teeny tiny little thing. We like tiny living. We're minimalist. We don't want big spaces to have to take care of and clean and have the urge to fill up. And so she found almost to the exact square footage of what I was saying I imagined we'd have. And it's a one bedroom, one bath, but in the living room area, it's kind of got like an L-shaped daybed situation, but it's not actually a daybed. It's two twin beds kind of butted together in the corner, like an L shape. So that would be where the two girls can sleep. And got a cute little kitchen, cute little bathroom. And then from the bathroom, it opens up into an outdoor shower. That's pretty awesome looking, actually. And then it's on 4 acres of just stunning, stunning jungle property that is covered in fruit trees. And it's on the beach. And it has its own little jungle trail down to the beach. And it's almost like right next to the lot that we want to buy. And so it's kind of like we get to test out the lot. And that's the whole point of this. We've only committed to 3 months at the moment. And we're not actually giving them a deposit until February. So all this said, this whole thing could fall through between now and February. I hope not. But if things keep going great and nothing changes, we will put this, you know, as a concrete form in February. And then we'll have this adorable place on 4 acres on the beach. And that means this summer we'll make the move. And it's just so exciting, you guys. Like, it's finally happening. We've been working towards this for 7 flipping years with just nonstop every single day talking about this goal while being present and grateful for what all we have. We have so much. We live a wonderful life. We're very grateful for everything in the present. But we've been working towards this goal. And so it just shifted. As of yesterday, it shifted from when we go to the jungle, when we go to the jungle, when we go to the jungle, to, okay, so on X date, when the move happens, like we're now all of a sudden in this planning mode where I'm going to be selling everything we own and decluttering all that's left, the little bits of hoards that I've still clung to despite my many, many purges. And it feels so good to think like, holy crap, we're going to have like probably 2 suitcases each. And that's going to be everything we hold on to. I mean, I'll probably have a few things I'll ask an in-law or my mother to hold on to. I know my husband has tons of tools for his mechanic work and tons of woodworking tools and stuff that we will probably have to put in my mother-in-law's shop until we definitely buy a lot and figure out how in the world to put that on a cargo ship and ship it down there. Or maybe we do let go of that and we start over and he buys everything over again. I don't know. See, I'm in this like planning mode. I've got like 6-7 months to just figure all this stuff out. And I'm so excited. I know my 5-year-old needs a new passport because it's about to expire already. She got a passport as soon as she was born. So did the second child. And they only last for 5 years when they're under 16. So she needs a new passport. You know, I got to get her vaccinated tomorrow. And I've just kind of like kicked my butt into immediate high gear of like, here we go. We're finally doing it. So, okay, that's enough of that. I think I've spent 20 minutes with this update, but I hope that you guys are interested in this because I know I would have been in this whole journey. I have been seeking out people on YouTube and in blogs and social media, trying to find other like-minded people that are going to do this big expat, you know, change. And I wanted to hear what that was like in the moment, because I was just constantly looking for inspiration, you know, to someone that was blazing the trail ahead of me so that I could do the same thing. And I've got my little vloggers that I watch on YouTube almost every morning. that are like, you know, they've already got their structures built. They've already got a year's worth of homesteading in. And so I've just been watching them with my popcorn, like, oh, this is going to be me one day. This is going to be me one day. I'm going to do it. So yeah, we're doing it. Okay. So I am going to shift here and I'm going to do something radical. I am going to read to you my rough draft of the very beginning of my book, which has several working titles right now. I can't decide. I did put them up on social media at some point, gosh, probably 6 months ago or longer, to get some opinions weighing in. So maybe I'll do that right now. tell me on social media or in comments or however you want to reach me, email me. But let me know your thoughts. Seriously, I really, really want to know your thoughts because this book needs to sell. And I want the message to spread. It's not about the money. Like I just want me people to know how we did this and how other people are doing this and kind of have a better guide than what we could find when we started. So my original thought for the title of this book was Fire-ism. It's still the name of my files on my computer is Fire-ism. And I don't know. That's probably not going to be the title because I can't even say it with a straight face. So I loved the book Essentialism. If any of you have read that, it's a really good book. And I love how he kind of created a new word. So, you know, you got minimalism and now there's essentialism. And I was like, why not fire-ism? And because ism, when you break it down, is a distinctive practice, a system or a philosophy. It's often an ideology or artistic movement. So I was thinking, okay, this is a movement and this is a very distinctive practice or system. And there are definitely philosophies that go in with this, such as minimalism or stoicism or frugalism, which are all things I want to talk about in this book. And FIRE, as you probably already know, is an acronym for financial independence, retire early, often referred to as the FIRE movement. So FIRE-ism. I thought that was brilliant. I felt like I got struck by a lightning bolt when I came up with that. And of course, there would be a subtitle to help explain it. So probably working subtitle would be something like One Couple's Journey to Join the Financial Independence Movement and Retire Early with Passive Income. Whew, that's wordy. So there's that. Or how about fire your boss and go live your life? That is the one that social media seemed to gravitate towards when I put this up there for a, you know, vote of hands. So I'm curious, you, dear podcast listeners, what do you think? Fire your boss and go live your life? And obviously FIRE would be the acronym. Or FIRE-ism? I'm curious. So my plan is to do something radical and read my rough draft. This is the very beginning of the book. Literally not a single soul has looked at this. No one has read this. Not even my husband, who is technically a co-writer of this book, even though he's not writing it, but he is definitely a thought contributor. I'm constantly asking him questions and brainstorming things, and he'll say brilliant things, and I jot them down in my notepad and go add it to the book. So he is going to be a co-writer on this, but he hasn't read this. And so there's been no editor. So, you know, a lot of these words, I'm a wordy person, obviously, I'm still talking. And by the time this gets published, an editor or two or three will have gone through it and cut down all the extraneous words. They will probably completely rearrange it. It might be barely recognizable by the time it's done. So just please keep that in mind. I just kind of wanted to turn this first podcast episode for season two into a sort of FIRE 101 episode. So I have a place to send folks who are brand new to this concept. I will say, here, go to episode one of season two and fast forward it to 30 minutes in or however long I've been talking now. And this is where you can go and hear a quick, you know, I don't know how long it's going to take me to read this, 15 minutes maybe, to have an overview of what the FIRE movement is and why it's even a thing. And I'm not planning on editing much of this audio or any of it. I just want to read it and get it out there. So if I stumble on some words and get into a tongue twister, just please forgive me. And if you hear this intro and you're intrigued by this, I'd urge you to sign up for my email newsletter on my website. It's megnordman.com. I don't have pre-orders available yet. I'm still writing this thing. But if you're on my newsletter list, then you'll definitely get notified when pre-orders are available and when it gets published. I don't spam folks with newsletters. I don't send out an email every single day or week or even month. I probably should be better at that by now, but I hate email personally, so I don't use my newsletter that much until I have actual news, which is what I think everyone should be doing. So when I have actual news and this is up for pre-order, you'll get the email. All right, so my goal is to finish this book and have it published before we leave for Costa Rica. Honestly, I don't think I'm going to have any Wi-Fi out there for the first handful of months. So I just want to get this done. It's largely written. I have over 30,000 words written on this, like probably 35,000 words, and I'm not even close to being done. I have so much more work I want to do. So, to give you a short overview, I'm first going to give a history of retirement, which I hope does not bore you to death. It's really like an introductory part here. A lot of history, a lot of dates and names, but I do think it's important because I want people to understand how the current retirement system got set up and why it's garbage. And then I get into chapter one, which is the intro to the FIRE movement, and it talks about what that even is and how it all began. And I will probably stop there because the rest of the book is getting more in depth on strategies and tactical things that you need to do and to achieve FIRE. And then I tell my financial story and then Jeremy's story and then our story once it combines as a couple when we actually begin the FIRE journey together. And then I'm also planning on having short stories from others who have successfully FIRED and those that are currently well on their FIRE journey. So it's a lot. This book is way bigger than my first book. The first one's a shorty. You can read that in an afternoon. But this one will be hefty. I'm pretty sure this is going to be a chunky book. So with that said, everything I read is obviously copyrighted by me, Meg Nordman. Do not repurpose this material in any way. Thank you. I know it's not the norm at all to read a rough draft to 30,000 people, but when have I ever followed cultural norms? Just when, really. So I'm going to pause here and I'm going to start reading. So here we go. About the authors. Hello, my name is Meg Nordman and I'm the primary writer of this book. My husband is Jeremy Fowler and he has been the guiding light for our family financially while we were on our FIRE journey. He's the one who runs the numbers and often the one who passes down the good books for me to read next. When writing this book, I interviewed him extensively so that his input would be folded into my words. So, as I'm typing what I believe should be in this book, he's adding even more fantastic points that should be included. I may be the writer, but this is not just my journey. It was our journey together, and we have discovered we make a really great team. Jeremy was an auto mechanic for over 15 years. He worked from 7 a.m. till 6 p.m. most days, and many days he went in early and stayed late. He rarely took a proper lunch break, but rather stood beneath a car hanging on a lift and scarfed down a quick peanut butter and jelly sandwich before continuing with his manual labor for bosses who could care less. After a bustling career in publishing and marketing, I decided to become a stay-at-home mom or a work-from-home mom once we discovered I was pregnant with our first child. As Jeremy continued working in the auto shop, I spent the majority of our FIRE journey at home with the kids, learning how to not spend all the money in the bank account the minute it came in, a hard urge to fight when spending all of your days with wildling infants and toddlers. I'm a stay-at-home mother who also writes blogs, podcasts, side hustles, manages, and cleans our vacation rentals. While I contributed less financially to our income for most of our FIRE journey, I saved us a small fortune by staying home and protecting our money from the child care drain. It really took the two of us working together to make the most of our income. There is so much more to us and our story than just this, and I'll share that with you soon. But I want to begin this book showing you, dear reader, that we achieved financial independence in just 6 years as a family of four on a single income with a blue-collar job. You don't need to work in tech for a Silicon Valley giant. You don't need to have high income to achieve financial independence. In the grand scheme of things, the amount of money you need in order to live a comfortable retirement or lifestyle does not have to be very much either. It matters less how much you earn. It matters more how you spend, save, and invest it. Traditional retirement is broken. Work until you're dead. That has been how we've managed as humans for most of our existence. Granted, we didn't live that long. Traditional retirement is a relatively modern concept, so the idea that we could retire early is even more modern. Let's do a quick history lesson to understand how and why we believe we need to work till at least age 65. It wasn't until the late 1800s and early 1900s that retirement as we know it began to take shape. In 1890, Otto von Bismarck introduced a pension scheme in Germany that determined the age of retirement to be 70 years, making Germany the first nation in the world to adopt an old age social insurance program. Even then, politicians knew that the program would cost very little, as the average German worker never even reached the retirement age. Yes, the average lifespan then was around 40 years. In 1916, Germany reduced the age of retirement to age 65, the age that has continued to stick with the future retirement programs. At the same time, the U.S. was slowly forming its culture around retirement. Pensions were already awarded to police, firemen, and teachers in the mid and late 1800s. In 1875, American Express began offering pensions, and by the 1920s, other industries, such as oil, railroads, and banking, began to offer pensions as well. Still, pensions were not readily available to most American workers. It was during this Industrial Revolution that the idea that older citizens needed to leave the workforce as they were slowing down assembly lines, taking excessive sick days, or struggling to learn the new machines while leaving young people without jobs. The Great Depression exacerbated the issue, and by 1935, the idea that older people needed to be paid to quit their jobs was more widespread. A California man named Francis Townsend also wanted to eradicate old age poverty, and the Townsend Plan had widespread popularity across the nation with its promise of every American over the age of 60 should receive $200 a month, which is about $4,000 in today's dollars. Townsend spread the idea that everyone had the right to retire. In response to this popular idea, President Franklin D. Roosevelt proposed the Social Security Act of 1935, which had each generation locked into a pay-it-forward model, as workers paid for their own retirement and the generation behind them. This shifted the government into a new role as a safety net for citizens. However, the Social Security plan was not nearly the amount that Townsend plan had proposed. While the average wage was $100 a month, the Social Security program of 1935 only paid around $17.50 per month. This was simply not enough. It was with this sad fact that Americans quickly learned that you would have to save for your own retirement. By the 1920s and 30s, retirement communities in Florida sprung up for the very first time and rebranded the image of retirement. Before, retirement was a hard concept to sell to this aging population, but retirement communities changed the idea that retirement left you with nothing to do to now becoming a chapter in life full of leisure activity time. The visual of spending your days on a golf course or on the edge of a resort pool still sticks in the minds of our society even today. In 1980, a man named Ted Benna noticed a new tax code provision in the Internal Revenue Code under Section 401, Subsection K, now known as the 401K. He realized that employees could give salaries to themselves pre-tax. So, Ted was among the first to establish a 401k plan at his own employer, now known as Johnson & Johnson. In order to encourage employees to take advantage of this new code, companies began promoting a company match. The 401k provision was never intentionally created to be a retirement plan. It's been a poor substitute for planned pensions and, quite frankly, a failure to American citizens who have used it as their sole or main retirement plan. It shifted the responsibility of retirement planning to the employee. The only thing the employee could guarantee him or herself is what they paid into it and how it was invested. But then the amount was left up to the volatile whim of the stock market, which can fluctuate greatly, on top of Wall Street money managers extracting high fees. Even Ted Benna, who discovered this new tax code, regrets that he helped formulate the 401k. "I knew it was going to be big, but I was certainly not anticipating that it would be the primary way people would be accumulating money for retirement 30 plus years later," Benna said in an interview with The Workforce. In the Netflix docuseries Explained, a short episode on retirement illustrates that the U.S. required a four-legged approach for retirement planning: pension, 401k, Social Security, and relying on family and friends. Each of these four strategies for saving for retirement are not quite enough on their own, and they still don't offer a very secure plan even when combined, hence the need to rely on other family members for additional help. In short, the country has fallen short on creating a true retirement plan for its citizens, who find themselves falling from middle class while working into near poverty when retired. It's an easy fix, the docuseries suggests, if we adopted a plan like NEST, National Employment Savings Trust in the UK. However, most 65-year-olds have enough saved to maintain their current quality of life through the 70s, but the problem is that they're living through their mid-80s or even longer. However, a quarter of the U.S. workforce doesn't have any retirement savings, while 92% of Americans are not hitting their retirement target. Currently, the prospects for millennials is not very good when they hit retirement age, and we can all recognize that inflation is only driving the prices of food, gas, and shelter even higher. When you look at the statistics, it's daunting and depressing. Too many people are approaching senior citizenship with the weight of shame and anxiety. It only highlights just how important it is to begin working on financial freedom now so you can retire comfortably, whether that age is at 65 or younger. If the current model of 401ks, Social Security, and/or pensions is not working, then it's time for you to learn how to achieve passive income for financial freedom so that you don't become one of these unfortunate statistics. Retirement and pension schemes were originally developed with the idea that we would not live that long and therefore not need much of that money anyways. However, we continued innovating with technology and making huge advances in healthcare and medicine without ever going back to the drawing board to innovate our retirement planning. In the U.S., our average life expectancy ranges from 74.4 years to 81 years from state to state, with women outliving men by an average of 5 years. Advancements have us living longer, but the majority of us experience a steep decline in physical health and ability in our latter years. Muscle mass and strength tend to reduce by 30 to 50% between the ages of 30 and 80 years old, with the main cause being the atrophy and reduction of muscle fibers. Furthermore, losses in muscular strength occur at an approximate rate of 12 to 14% per decade after age 50 years. Why am I talking about muscle fibers in a chapter about retirement? Because I want to know why we should work till we are 65 or older in order to finally get out and have all the experiences we've spent a lifetime dreaming about. Why should we work until we are 65, accepting only 2 weeks of vacation a year, if we're lucky, only to experience elderly leisure for a mere 9.4 to 16 years? We can't even assume we'll live to see our golden years in the first place. But even if we do, what will we have the energy, strength or mental capacity for once we are there. We can't bank on being the fittest or sharpest elderly person, especially not after a lifetime of working stressful jobs, physically demanding labor, or on the flip side, sitting all day long on our bums at our desks. Hiking Mount Machu Picchu, climbing the steps of ancient ruins in a jungle, learning how to dance the salsa, or spearfishing in a coral reef are the kinds of experiences we most likely won't be able to pursue if we are no longer in optimal health. Most elderly friends I know can barely walk 2 blocks due to cardio problems, much less traverse an entire city, as they always dreamed they would when they had the ability to retire and travel at long last. The concept of retirement is still a fairly modern concept, but we do all agree in modern times as a Western culture that we have a right to retire instead of dropping dead working at our desk or in a field. So an even newer, more radical idea is that you don't have to wait till you are a senior citizen for the privilege of truly living your life instead of working all of your life. And hey, living life can absolutely include work if you desire that, but you get to choose the kind of work that lights you up. Chapter 1, Introduction to the FIRE Movement. What would you do if you never had to clock into work again? If you didn't have to report to your grayish colored cubicle? If you didn't feel that nagging responsibility to respond to an emails while you drank your first coffee? What would you do if money was no longer an issue to worry about? Seriously, think about it. Let your dreams get big and wild. Would you travel to Nicaragua, Thailand, or Hawaii? Would you live in Australia, Italy, or France? Would you write books? Would you volunteer for local charities or start your own nonprofit? Paint large-scale artworks? Illustrate children's books? Sculpt with your bare hands? Fix up motorcycles for fun? Pick up woodworking? Learn how to salsa and waltz? Go scuba diving? Learn how to kite surf? Become a wine connoisseur? Start your own orchard? Tend to an abundant vegetable garden? Would you learn how to sail and then take a trip around the world? Live in a tiny home? Build yourself a treehouse? Renovate an old villa? Travel the country in a converted school bus? Bake your own bread? Raise goats and pigs? Pursue a musical career? Learn how to play guitar or piano? Learn how to rock climb, surf, ski, snowboard? Hike an epic trail to the top of a mountain? Learn how to fly a plane? I mean, let's just get a clear vision of your dream life. Make a bucket list of things you've always wanted to see, learn, or try. Get more and more specific with the details. What kind of shape are you in? And how do you feel? What does it look like outside? What passion project are you excited to work on? Will you be traveling anywhere soon, or are you cozied up in your dream spot? What does your living space look like, or does that even matter to you? This is an important visualization tool because it will likely serve as the backbone of your why while on your journey to financial independence, or at least part of it. The clearer you can visualize your most time-free, financially free life, the more likely you are to stay on the path. Now, let's take a step back and think about what it requires to achieve any of these big dreams. An abundance of time, a certain amount of money, and good health. That's it. The answer isn't, I need to win the lottery. You don't have to be a multimillionaire to achieve your dream life. You just need to start working on achieving financial independence so that you can discover the freedom that comes with owning your own time, combined with the freedom that comes with passive income, all while at an age young enough to still have the energy and good health to go after every item on your list. To be clear, this is not for the folks who answer the dream life question above with visions of mansions, fleets of luxury vehicles, vacations at high-end beach resorts, or first class flights while wearing stylish designer clothes. This is not a book for someone wanting to become a billionaire so that they can appear important, impressive, and successful to the outside world. This is not about being rich with cash. It's about being wealthy in time while comfortably covering their lifestyle's expenses. This is a book for those who simply want to leave the 9-to-5 grind, get off of the hamster wheel, and use that newfound time to chase their passions for their own self-fulfillment. This is for people who want to feel like they really lived their life when they reflect on it at their deathbed. You won't be laying there thinking, "I wish I had answered more emails. I wish I would have made more profit for the corporation." Or, "I wish I owned 35 more pairs of brand name sneakers and 5 more sports cars." You certainly don't want to be laying there thinking, "I wish I'd spent more time with my kids when they were little. I wish I had written that book. I wish I'd seen more of the world." Financial independence, FI, is the freedom from having to work for a paycheck. It is not a new idea. But in the past 2 decades, with the rise of technology's information sharing capabilities, it has shaped itself into a movement and community of like-minded people. The end goal for many people seeking financial independence is to retire early, RE, which looks different for many people, as I'll discuss later in this chapter. The acronym for the FIRE movement, FIRE, Financial Independence, Retire Early, was developed and adopted along the way. If you feel a spark of excitement about the possibility of owning your own time, I urge you to continue reading so that you'll have a blueprint to get started on your own journey to freedom. In the coming pages of this introduction, you're about to see a lot of FIRE-specific vocabulary used. Stick with me, and I'll explain everything deeper in later chapters. I want you to have an introduction to the overarching idea behind FIRE first, and then we'll dig into the nitty-gritty of it all. First, a quick history of the FIRE movement. Who shaped this movement? The modern age version of financial independence can be traced back to Vicki Robin and Joe Dominguez, who published the book Your Money or Your Life in 1992. In 1997, Robert Kiyosaki published Rich Dad, Poor Dad. In 2006, J.D. Roth began his blog Get Rich Slowly. In 2007, Jacob Fisker began blogging under the name Early Retirement Extreme. In 2011, Peter Adney began blogging under the name Mr. Money Mustache. Also in 2011, Paula Pant of the Afford Anything blog began blogging and then later added a podcast in 2016. In 2012, Brandon Ganch came online as The Mad Fiantist and began his blog and podcast. In 2016, J.L. Collins published the book A Simple Path to Wealth. In 2017, the Choose FI podcast began, hosted by Jonathan Mendoza and Brad Barrett, and their book, Choose FI, published in 2019. Also in 2019, the Playing with Fire documentary was released along with an accompanying book. Christy Shin and Bryce Leung of the Millennial Revolution blog published their story and strategy in 2019 in their book, Quit Like a Millionaire. More blogs, podcasts, and books are being released every year as the information continues to become more accessible and the FIRE movement continues to blaze a trail. The above timeline gives just a quick overview of some of the key players that have shaped a now large community of people chasing and achieving FIRE. There are ample books, bloggers, podcasters, and online communities not listed, but I've selected the key names that occur most frequently when people cite FI resources and initial inspiration. I'll spend more time discussing these resources and others in a future chapter. As the above leaders became increasingly more popular in online communities such as Facebook groups, blog forums, Twitter, and Reddit threads, the different approaches and strategies for achieving FI began to meld together, so that there now seems to be almost a formula that has been widely adopted by those beginning their FI journey. it often looks like this. Number one, get completely out of debt. Number two, save money, meaning spend less than you make and strive to increase your savings rate to 50 to 70% of your income. Number three, invest and generate passive income. This breaks down into two things. One, begin real estate investing, long-term or short-term rentals, and or begin investing in the stock market, specifically the total stock market index. Number four, achieve a FI number. This is the amount of money needed to be independent. Number five, retire, if you like. It's really quite simple when you distill it down. Of course, each step has its own list of strategies, methods, and timeline to sort out, which we'll delve into in just a moment. It's not rocket science, and it's not particularly difficult. The hardest part is self-control, discipline, and eliminating vices and bad habits. If you think you have the capacity to regain control of your mind, you have the ability to regain your time and life's potential. There are, of course, a myriad of other ways to invest your money and generate passive income. A few that may come to mind would be to create intellectual property, royalties from books, music, courses, patents, or to invest your money into riskier places like cryptocurrencies, Bitcoin, Ethereum, etc., blockchain assets like NFTs, riskier stock plays like shorting options or cherry picking a stock, and so much more. But these can be complicated and come with much more uncertainty, volatility, or risk. I may gloss over a few of these in the book simply so that you can gain some literacy on the topics, but these are not the typical way to invest and grow passive income in the FI community. Rather, the vast majority prefer the stability and relatively low risk of real estate or index funds so that they can be more certain that their money will continue to grow and fund the rest of their life's adventures. Most people in the personal finance world would agree that strategies such as real estate and index funds or ETFs are considered investing, that selecting a single company stock is considered betting, and that crypto is considered gambling. I'm sure there are those who would disagree with such labeling, but since this book is written for those who are brand new to the world of financial gains, let's focus primarily on the lower risk side of investing to better ensure growth and just peek briefly into the strategies for betting and gambling. Despite these terms, they are all worthwhile to have in your portfolio, but only after you have a strong foothold with investing first. The information for every step is available to us now with the advent of technology, putting information literally at our fingertips. With that, there has been a growing movement of people putting these principles into practice and retiring at an early age, most often in their 30s or 40s, though some as early as their 20s. And on the opposite side of the spectrum, even 50-somethings that are eager to speed the retirement process up. The moment the amount of money coming in from your investments matches the amount of money you need for everyday expenses, you have achieved financial independence, or achieved FI, as this community would say. Some people refer to this as achieving their FI number, which is the dollar amount they calculate that they need to cover their expenses in their newly retired life, which would be significantly less than their current expenses if they implement strategies such as geo arbitrage, which is moving somewhere that is significantly less expensive, or house hacking, which is living in a home where all expenses are covered, such as living in a multifamily home and renting the other units, and more. The FI number is the amount of passive income you'll receive annually from your investments, often generated by rental income, dividends, royalties, or a small percentage you draw down each year from stock investments, often referred to as the 4% rule, which will be explained later. Choosing strategies that lower your FI number while practicing habits that increase your savings rate, you can achieve FI much faster. Time tested. In the midst of writing this book, we have just experienced the worst crash / recession since the Great Depression of the 1920s. I'm going to pop in here real quick and say there are some words like crash or recession that are probably going to get edited because already looking back from when the stock market crashed, you know, we have different terms for things. So just bear with me, you guys. All right, back to the book. Many people were reeling from the stock market crashes of March 2020, which was partly a reaction to a pandemic of coronavirus that shook the globe. On March 9th, 2020, the Dow fell 7.79%. Apologies for the child singing in the background. On March 12th, the Dow dropped 9.9%, the sixth worst percentage drop in history. And finally, on March 16th, the Dow lost 12.9%, giving us the three worst point drops in our stock market's history. Sorry for the children. The country and globe was in a communal state of panic and uncertainty. As entire countries went into lockdown, non-essential businesses were forced to shutter as the world waited out the viral storm outside. The economy came to a grinding halt, and businesses laid off most of their employees. The unemployment rate in the U.S. alone reached unprecedented heights of 14.8%, the highest rate observed since data collection began in 1948. The FI community held on strong throughout this. While investors watched as their retirement savings lost 30% in merely 2 weeks, there was ample speculation about how bad it could continue to get, causing even more fear among investors. Most of the people in the FI community are relatively young and new investors, and this was their first crash to experience, and it came labeled with all sorts of scary words such as unprecedented, unknown, and never before in history has it been this bad. Podcasts and blogs by top leaders in the FIRE movement reminded everyone of the doctrine that the then 62-year-old author J.L. Collins had outlined years before. Do not sell your stock. Buy more while it's on sale. With unwavering confidence, the community stuck to its game plan. It was amazing to witness the collective strength that the FI community cultivated as they weathered the financial storm. They then watched as their stocks and index funds did precisely as their elder mentors predicted and began to quickly rise and even surpass the point of the crash. Many people that were new to this strategy were pleasantly rewarded for not cashing out and following the game plan laid out by the stock market veterans who have shaped this movement. The FI leaders had endured crashes in the 80s and in 2008, and the next generation of newbies on their path to financial freedom survived the madness of 2020. Again, none of this information is particularly new. It's only becoming more available to the masses as the fire spreads. Much of the FI community, largely millennials who are currently in their 30s and 40s, are striving for their financial independence because of their experience shaped by living through the Great Recession of 2007 to 2009. As summarized by the authors of Playing with Fire, coming out of the Great Recession, an entire subset of people became disillusioned with the status quo. We'd been sold the idea that though life is expensive, as long as we worked hard, clipped coupons, and set aside a little money for retirement, we could someday dig our way out of student and mortgage debt to enjoy a few brief years living life how we wanted to. With the downturn in our economy, many people started to realize that the stories we'd been fed simply weren't true. Our futures were being ruined by rampant consumerism and keeping up with the Joneses, and traditional financial advice did little to help. Out of this growing unrest came new ideas. And then here's my subtext, such as the strategies and mindsets established by bloggers like Mr. Money Mustache, The Frugal Woods, Millennial Revolution, 1500 Days to Freedom, and Retire by Age 40. again, that was back a three paragraph quote from the authors of Playing with Fire. Another evolution of the Phi community is being shaped out of our experiences with this most recent recession. Is this what we're calling it? Is it inflation? Is it hyperinflation? I don't know. We'll figure this out in the editing process. Back to the book. If ever there were a time to start working on your future, it would be now. Recession or hyperinflation or not, do not delay in setting yourself up for early retirement. Time is our most valuable resource, and the amount we are given is unpredictable, non-renewable, and finite. Take charge of your finances and set yourself up to enjoy your life's potential to the fullest. Retiring early does not entail society's usual image of an elderly person confined to a lazy boy recliner with a remote in hand. Nor does it mean you'll be laying by a poolside in a Florida condominium sipping martinis for all of your days. Financial independence means you can leave your 9-to-5 if you want. Some people truly love their career and have no desire to turn in a 2 weeks' notice, even if the amount of money their investments are churning far surpasses their paycheck. There's a popular term in the FI community that was coined by author J.L. Collins, FU money. Working while having financial stability or financial independence means you have the ability to leave if you like. And now the power play in a typical workplace is reversed. You no longer need your boss's money, but your boss still needs you. You no longer have to be anxious about being fired or worry if you're declined the vacation request you sent in. You have the power to walk if need be. Some people strive for financial independence simply for the peace of mind and the freedom that FU money provides. Here's a quote for you. There are many things money can buy, but the most valuable of all is freedom. J.L. Collins, author of The Simple Path to Wealth, writes, freedom to do what you want and work for whom you respect. Those who live paycheck to paycheck are slaves. Those who carry debt are slaves with even stouter shackles. Don't think for a moment their masters don't know it. Again, that's a J.L. Collins quote. Love it. FU money. However, FU money doesn't have to be a threatening and aggressive thing, as the name may suggest. Financially independent employees can be the best kind to have in a work environment. Unburdened from the stress of needing the paycheck, they are more creative in their work and honest with ideas on how to simplify systems, items that an income-reliant employee may be too afraid of mentioning for fear of rocking the boat and upsetting an employer. An employee who is working because of their sheer passion or enjoyment for the job is more creative and more confident and will naturally yield better results. The vast majority of early retirees still work. They just no longer work for the man of the corporate world. Most people who have achieved FIRE now have the privileged and fortunate experience of pursuing all of their creative interests, hobbies, big goals, and travel dreams because they have afforded themselves the time to do so. They are usually not rich. Many of them have found a way to live comfortably on a sum of $20,000 to $40,000 of passive income a year. But with their funds and free time, they start their own entrepreneurial businesses and dabble in a wide variety of projects that genuinely interest them. We have met several people along our own FI journey who were close to financial independence and nervous about the retire early bit. We found ourselves quizzed on where we wanted to move and what we planned on doing to fill our time up. These seem like the easiest answers in the world to answer to us. However, this is not the case for everyone. Some people are petrified at the thought of all this extra time and at a loss for what they would really want to do once they are free from their golden shackles. I suppose this is because they have spent so much time in the system, going straight from an academic institution to climbing the corporate ladder, that they have not given themselves enough time to ponder or explore much else outside of their career. they may have a harder time transitioning into this wide open space of early retirement, but they'll have ample time to playfully and curiously experiment as they discover the things that truly ignite their hearts and make them happy. Happiness is the ultimate goal, after all. Phi number. Too often, people in the Phi community get too obsessive about their Phi number. They forget that the end goal is actually freedom and happiness, not money. Putting too much weight on the Phi number is not a healthy way to work towards your financial independence goals. It's not a completely stationary goal either. It's always fluctuating. You can achieve your Phi number, but when the stock market dips or an investment stops panning out, that number now has to adjust. To consider the worst case scenario, if that money is suddenly stripped away, will you still be happy with your life? We suggest only looking at money as a tool and never the end goal. However, working on your life, your mindset, gratitude, purpose, hobbies, creative passions, relationships, and awe for the world around you is still far more important than money. These more important aspects of life are often lumped into a term called the Phi lifestyle. Many people, like ourselves, discover they are able to live their Phi lifestyle long before they actually achieve Phi. You may also see similar terms used in the Phi community, such as lifestyle design or slow Phi. The latter term was coined by bloggers called the Phioneers, by the way. In Darren Hardy's book, The Compound Effect, he refers to harnessing the power of Big Mo. An old sporting term, Mo is short for momentum. When you lay the new groundwork for good habits or finances in place, you don't notice any change at first, but it's quietly compounding in the background. Suddenly, everything seems to go whoosh as that compounding momentum reaches exponential heights. There comes a point in the journey to reaching your Phi number that your investments will be compounding and returning that interest as passive income at higher and higher rates. You'll notice you become more and more relaxed and comfortable as you get closer and closer to having substantial FU money. You might ask for extra days off of work or for a part-time schedule. You may find it's easier to afford a nice vacation without putting much of a dent in your savings. With the increase of a little extra time, you may finally start pursuing the creative interests and hobbies that you previously seemed to have no time for. Before long, you might look around and realize you're living a pretty amazing life, despite not being technically Phi yet. You are living the Phi lifestyle before you're actually Phi. I think this is a healthier goal to work towards than just staying hyper-focused on your Phi number. Start shaping your life now to reflect how you want it to look when you reach Phi. Dabble, learn, and experiment, and by the time you are financially independent, your new work, which could possibly generate extra income, will be a fun passion project, and you won't find yourself uncomfortable and bored. Early retirement will only be the beginning of your real life's work. All right, that's it for today, you guys, because after that comes chapter 2. I'm going to scroll through this. I got another 79 pages here written and even more in my notes tab. But goodness, I talk about investing strategies to achieve FIRE, the three constants of these FI investment strategies. I have some notes for Jeremy to finish, stuff about cash flow, net worth, your bottom line, how to diversify and what that looks like, being debt free. Oh, I'm just scrolling here, you guys, growing the gap, investing for beginners. Talk a lot about traditional income, passive income, what that looks like, stock market investments, real estate investments, intellectual property assets, scrolling, ETFs, cherry picking stocks, value investing, long-term rentals, short-term rentals, back to intellectual property. And then I get into kind of like my story. It goes on and on. And then I actually have one section that, I don't know, might become blogs or a freebie, or it might be part of the book. I don't know. But I have a whole big section on practical tips for cutting costs. Like literally just hundreds of things that we did that helped us chisel away bit by bit by bit to get our living costs down. I think it was down to like $24,000 a year. I think it's kind of stabilized around $27,000 a year. And I think that's really close to what Mr. Money Mustache does too. But yeah, there's a lot of things you can do to not just have your money just disappearing and going out every single week, every month. So I think that'll be just a fun thing to add in there. But yeah, it's a doozy of something. I'm excited. What do you guys think? That is the rough draft that has not been edited by anyone or read by anyone. So yeah, it's rough. I know there's some editing to be due. I can't even talk anymore. My ears are hurting from these headphones. My throat's scratchy. So I'm going to hop off of here. And I hope you guys enjoyed that. It was apparently 30 minutes worth of reading. And I had one more exciting thing I wanted to tell you about in my intro piece that belonged with the jungle chapter, but I'm going to close with it here. I had a screenwriter, like a production company in LA, reach out to us a reality TV show. That sounds really dumb saying out loud, but yeah, just like following what we're doing down there. It sounds like they want to start filming after we've already got something built, so we're a little ways off at the moment. But I mean, we're doing Zoom calls, I'm writing up proposals and bios and, you know, stitching together inspiration and stuff like that. So it's very early stages. You know, they'd have to come out and film a pilot first and then shop it around or something. I don't know. I'm completely new to this, but like, what? It's so crazy. They reached out to us. All four of us were in agreement. I was surprised at that. It's a lot of different people to have opinions, and everyone was like, yeah, no, this sounds fun, cool opportunity. Shine a spotlight on these this surf hotel cabinas and stuff that we want to build and open up to the public for all of you guys to hopefully come and hang out with us down there in the jungle. How cool would that be? So I am working on that right now. And we will see what happens. Maybe nothing happens. I don't know. I'm probably not even supposed to like put this out in the world when it's such early, early conversation. But I guess these things, they take a long time. So gosh, who knows? What is this? That could be like 2 years away or something, because we'd have to buy the lot and we'd have to start building. And we all know building takes a while. But once there is at least a structure started and things are starting to kick off, that is when they would like to start filming. So, and they told me to take lots of video, which you guys all know that I do already, but take lots of video so we can do flashbacks to the whole process, you know? So I am planning on vlogging once things really start kicking into action here for us and keeping things updated on YouTube. So anyway, we'll see what happens with that, but how random and cool is that? Anyway, so let me say the normal lingo of, hey, I talked a lot about finances today. I am not an expert. This is not financial advice. You know, do your own due diligence and research and all that jazz. Yeah, I'm back, you guys. This is season two. Let's get this rolling. Tell friends about it. Sign up for my email newsletter so you know when this thing gets published. And hit me up on social media. Let me know what you think. Is it crap? Are there any facts in there I got wrong? Things, you know, that should be added that you think I didn't put in there? Were you bored? What title do you think I should go with? you have any random creative ideas for me? Yeah. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. I'm hoping to get the Jillian Johns Rude conversation up next week and getting back into the groove again. Thanks for all your love and support. Bye.
Because we discussed personal investments on this episode, I need to give a quick disclaimer. The Freedom to Journey podcast content is provided for general information purposes only and does not constitute investment, accounting, legal, tax, or other professional advice. Listeners should not act upon the content or information found here without first seeking appropriate advice from an accountant, financial planner, lawyer, or other professional.